Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
Fears that there will be more disturbances in Northern Ireland tonight after a week of tensions and clashes that have left 74 PSNI officers injured. Well, for more on this, I'll be joined in a moment by the political editor of the Belfast Telegraph, Suzanne Breen. But first, here is a vox pop from BBC Northern Ireland reporter Helen Jones from some members of the loyalist community in Belfast's Shankill Road who were doing their shopping the morning after the night's riots.
In a way you can understand, it's not right. Everybody has a right to live in peace. They have theirs, we have ours, but there's nothing. It's all one side up.
So you're talking there's nothing for unionists,
there's
for loyalists?
Nothing. Everything's just being took away from us.
Like what, for example?
Everything, our culture, jobs, housing, anything to do with being part of the United Kingdom. They hate us.
So you're talking about the Northern Ireland Protocol then as well, are you?
It's a prolonged thing. It's gone on. If it hasn't been one thing, it's been another. It's been building up and building up, and it's just reached breaking point.
Being pushed and pushed to the limit, and it's just blown.
Are you not saddened by this, to see this happening?
Yes, yes. But when you walk round and look round your area, everything's gone. There's no prospects. The kids have no prospects of jobs. Nothing. You walk up and down this road and it's completely empty. And you walk up and down the falls of the Springfield and everything's brand new houses and shopping centres. What have we got? Nothing.
What have we got? Nothing, says that lady who was speaking to BBC's Northern Ireland reporter this morning. Suzanne Breen joins us now on the line. And I wonder what you think of that, Suzanne. It's a very interesting insight into the feelings of some of those who live in the loyalist unionist community. You know, their culture is gone, their jobs are gone, everything is gone.
It is indeed, and it's very welcome that we're actually hearing these voices in the media, because sometimes there is just a very sanitised narrative. The view comes across that everyone is opposed to the violence on the streets, that everyone's against it, and we really do need as journalists to go in there and to poke and to prod and to hear real people's real views. That lady reflects widespread feeling in the loyalist community that nationalists are getting everything, that they are the community politically, social and economically on the rise. Now, if we look at the actual statistics about poverty and about deprivation, they don't reflect that. They're both communities, it isn't good for both communities in working class areas, but there is actually greater poverty and deprivation still in nationalist areas. But really, this week in Belfast, we had two sets of youth stoning each other, throwing petrol bombs at each other with hatred in their hearts, when really they are mirror images of each other. They stood there on the peace line in West Belfast, almost identical in their dress, in their background and in their economic prospects, but yet they saw each other as the enemy. And that's a very sad reality for Northern Ireland as we come to mark the 23rd anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement tomorrow.
I know there's some speculation that maybe the death of Prince Philip might mean that there won't be street disturbances tonight. I don't know, is that something that you're hearing? Is that your expectation?
The protests that were due to be held tonight have been cancelled as a mark of respect to Prince Philip. I would expect that to extend over the weekend. I think loyalists themselves realise that the image of the Queen's loyal subjects on the streets attacking police, attacking the Crown forces at such a time would be absolutely awful, particularly in the British mainland.
There have been some significant loyalist groups making statements today.
Yes, we have had a statement from the LCC, but that's an umbrella group that reflects the viewpoint of loyalist paramilitaries. They said that peaceful protest was the way forward, but there really wasn't the strong condemnation that we would have expected of the scenes of violence that we have seen. The LCC said there was a failure to understand loyalist anger. It hit out at the Irish government, and I think that there has been a complete lack of leadership in the unionist community on the ground. We saw last night Sinn Féin out, very strong presence trying to restrain nationalist youth and keep the peace. We have not seen the same scenes reflected on the unionist side of the political divide.
So what about political efforts at a higher level then, if you will, away from the community? I know there were talks between Northern Secretary Brandon Lewis and the SDLP today. Some calls as well for roundtable talks between the Northern political parties and the British government. Do you think that's necessary? Would it help?
There have been calls for Boris Johnston himself to step in and to chair talks. I don't know if that's going to happen. Boris Johnston has an awful lot to deal with at the moment. I don't know if Northern Ireland is high on his list of priorities. And I actually wonder, would his involvement inflame the situation? Because this is the Prime Minister that has betrayed unionists in Northern Ireland, or certainly that's the way that they see it. He came over here, he was at the DUP conference, he made very passionate promises that he would never agree to an Irish Sea border, and then he went and did exactly that. So the spectre of perfidious Albion very much hangs over the current situation in Northern Ireland.
Suzanne Breen, political editor with the Belfast Telegraph, thank you so much for joining us with that analysis. And as we've been hearing from Suzanne, more than 70 police officers hurt in what the PSNI are calling Northern Ireland's worst violence for years. And well, for more on this, I'm joined now by Thomas Byrne, Minister of State with the Department of the Taoiseach and also the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade with the responsibility for EU affairs. And welcome, Minister, to the programme. Are the two governments in Dublin and London, do you think, just hearing what Suzanne has to say there, do you think they're doing enough to calm tensions? Should they be convening talks with the parties in the north?
Well, I think the Irish government certainly is doing everything that it possibly can. I know that today is obviously a particularly difficult day in Britain, but there are ongoing contacts between both governments and between certainly the Irish government and the Northern parties, and certainly the British government, as we've heard as well, and the Northern parties. So that is taking place today, not in full public view, but is taking place, and I think is welcome, because that's absolutely essential that parties are working, speaking together with one voice. That you don't give any excuses whatsoever for violence, and that the rule of law is maintained. I think that's really, really important, that every party in Northern Ireland sticks to the rule of law, supports the police, supports prosecution services, because part of this, I mean, I fully accept what Suzanne Breen said, that a lot the deprivation is a huge issue in Northern Ireland. That requires the Assembly to work together with the governments to get solutions to that, but part of it is pure criminality as well, and that does need a police response that's supported by all communities.
Would it be helpful for Boris Johnson to get actively hands-on involved at this point?
Well, look, I think, to be fair, I think Boris Johnson and the Taoiseach were talking yesterday, and there is work going on between both governments. So I'm not going to start coming on asking them to do more, but I do know that there is always benefit in Northern Ireland when the two governments and all the parties are working together. So the more that we have of that, and I would actually say the more visibility we have of that, the better. And it's not about one government taking one side of the divide in Northern Ireland. It's about both governments working together to protect the peace process and to try to improve conditions in Northern Ireland, and particularly in that socioeconomic side. I mean, the protocol is clearly at issue in some communities, but the protocol actually presents an opportunity, an economic opportunity for Northern Ireland that I have asked British counterparts to actively work on. I mean, there are British companies already talking about needing to set up a base in the single market for distribution or whatever. Northern Ireland, for example, and indeed the Republic as well, but Northern Ireland would be a perfect opportunity for that, because it's within the British customs territory and within the single
and
market.
And that is an economic opportunity, effort. You know, that is there, obviously. But I don't know if you heard, we had a vox pop from BBC Northern Ireland listening to women on the Shankill Road this morning, and they were talking about the loss of identity. It's not about economics for them, you know, and rarely is it really when it comes to the North, is it about economics?
No,
it's about identity.
I accept that. And
she was citing, I don't know, did she actually say the protocol, one of the ladies in the vox pop, but she was talking about the loss of jobs, the loss of culture, and this sense that everything is being taken away from them. The protocol, in the sense of there being a border down the Irish Sea or split from Great Britain, would obviously feed into all that, wouldn't it?
Well, look, the Loyalist parties were part of the Good Friday Agreement 23 years ago. And I would say if Loyalist parties at that time can be part of the Good Friday Agreement. I think that loyalist communities can still be part of that. The beauty and the idea of the Good Friday Agreement was that all aspirations in Northern Ireland are respected and reflected in efficient policy of both governments. So if you're a nationalist, your nationalist identity is respected and can thrive. And the same for unionist and loyalist identities. And I think all of us have to be conscious as well of that, that people do feel under threat. Mm. Northern Ireland is not in
but
a good place when communities feel under threat. But these are the same people that could be part of it.
Did you accept that the protocol has made people in the unionist community in Northern Ireland feel more under threat in terms of their identity and their sense of a link to Great Britain? Do you accept that the protocol has caused serious problems in that regard for them?
Truthfully, the protocol doesn't affect the constitutional status of Northern Ireland. What has affected and caused all these problems is the Brexit itself has caused all these problems. The protocol is an attempt to ensure that there is a solution to reflect the unique issues in the Republic of Ireland. But I think that everyone seems to accept, even if they're slow about it, the protocol is here to stay. That's the British government. Unionists did until recently. It's here to stay. And the key thing now for all of us is, and I know the European Union is committed to this, is to ensure that it works for all communities in Northern Ireland and to seek to get the best benefits. And I'd encourage the British government to work collectively with the European Union and to show people that they don't need to feel threatened by this.
All right.
That in fact it is an opportunity for them, and if they're unionists or loyalists, that they're still within the United Kingdom, and that's their aspiration that is utterly protected by the Good Friday Agreement.
In the last short while, Minister, we heard that there's going to be an incorporeal meeting of Cabinet this evening to add more countries to the mandatory hotel quarantine list. It's been widely reported these will include the USA, France and Germany. Can you confirm that?
No, well, I can't confirm. I mean, that's a matter for Cabinet to decide when they do decide. So I think we wait for the Cabinet to decide what countries are added to the list. And I think people will accept this as a temporary measure in the interest of public health. It's a difficult thing to do. But I think all countries in the European Union at various points have taken put travel bans in place, or nobody has put mandatory hotel quarantine. But there have been travel bans and we haven't done that. So this is a measure that's necessary for public health, where, you know, the numbers are going down. Thankfully, vaccinations are going up. If we do this, I hope, for a temporary period, as long as it's necessary, for the short time that I hope is necessary, it should have a good effect on public health.
And if it's necessary for public health, then can we take it that all the countries that the public health experts have suggested should be on the list will be on the list? That would include the USA, France and Germany and many others.
That's a matter for Cabinet. I will say this, the Irish people at the moment, generally speaking, can't go to the USA. So these types of arrangements are pretty common at the moment. International travel is severely curtailed. Mm. But look, the Cabinet will make the decision. There's been a lot of work ongoing to make sure that it can be. It's the easiest thing in the world to call for this, but to operationalise it is really, really difficult. And, you know, we've done that successfully so far. And it's a big step now to go to the next step. It looks like that will happen. But I think that we should wait for the Cabinet to decide on which particular countries are included in the list.
Yeah, there may not be an awful lot of international travel going on at the moment, but there's enough, you know, because The Independent is reporting today that 6,000 people flew into Ireland from those countries that the public health experts said should be on the mandatory hotel quarantine list in just 1 week. And that includes France. 6,000 people in just 1 week from these countries that the public health experts say should have been going into mandatory hotel quarantine.
Yeah, I think this reflects some of the discussion that's been happening over the last week. I mean, the vast majority, nearly all of them, I suspect, are Irish citizens who are entitled to be here. And that's the first thing. I think this is often presented as some way to keep people out of the country who shouldn't be here. But the truth is, this will affect Irish people and Irish citizens, Irish residents in the main. We are an island with a lot of people coming and going. We have companies where employees move from one country to the other. That's really difficult in the pandemic, but it is a factor of our economic life. So these are not tourists. There is little or no tourism going on anywhere.
But that doesn't really matter, Minister. Is that not to miss the point? I mean,
no,
you know, whether they're Irish or they're from a different country, if they have the virus, they have the virus. Like, that's the problem.
And that's why this has been brought in. But I'm only saying that to illustrate the considerations that go in and why different departments have different views on this particular issue. Mm. That it's not just, we're not New Zealand in the middle of the Pacific. We have a situation where the island is open for business and for workers. And we're just a completely different situation. We have brought in the toughest measure in the European Union. No other country in the European Union has this. We've done that. We've done it successfully so far.
And have we done it successfully? Or is it not an awful mess with some people absconding from mandatory hotel quarantine, other people who are fully vaccinated being forced to stay in mandatory hotel quarantine, and then the vast majority of countries that the public health teams have said to be, should be added to the list 2 weeks ago, not added to the list, with people pouring into the country from those countries? What's successful about any of that?
I think there's a gross misdescription that people are pouring into the country.
Well, 6,000 in 1 week is pretty significant, I would have thought.
That's not pouring into the country. I mean, when we stopped travel over Christmas for a few days from Britain, I mean, you wouldn't believe the genuine stories that we were hearing, people with families in both jurisdictions, hospital appointments. This sort of thing is genuinely happening. And there's a couple of the caricature cases that we've seen in the media, but the vast majority are ordinary people who are just going about their normal work. Now, we have restricted that hugely. Mm. Yes, there have been a couple of abscondments, but that has also happened where it's been brought in Australia as well. It doesn't mean that, you know, the government has made a mess of the system. The system is working very well for the countries that it applies to, and it will continue now, I think, in terms of further countries that will apply
Is it working very well for the people who are fully vaccinated, like we heard yesterday in Liveline from a lady in Israel who was fully vaccinated, who is going to have to stay in mandatory quarantine for 2 weeks and pay €2,000? We've an email from another listener asking if people from the USA are now going to be added to the list. Will fully vaccinated people from the USA also have to stay in mandatory quarantine for 2 weeks?
Well, you see, everybody was pushing this. The opposition parties are pushing this for every country to be brought in for a period of time.
Yeah, but no, I'm asking for fully vaccinated
people. No, but this was to push on. And then they've some of the same politicians, by the way, are signing petitions to open up, you know, the airline business again. So there's a huge amount of hypocrisy. We have done here what is measured. We can't go to America at the moment. There's a blanket ban on people who have been in Britain and Ireland from going to the United States at the moment, for example. So these measures are happening in various countries.
Okay, Minister, I'll bring you back to the question, if you don't mind.
We have mandatory hotel quarantine.
Which is specifically about fully vaccinated
people.
But
the question is, for example, on vaccinations, I mean, what NPHET have said on that is that they haven't yet absolutely affirmed that that there is no transmission from vaccinated people. But there you go. I mean, do we start with exceptions? Do we, you know, or do we have a system of mandatory hotel quarantine? We have a situation in Australia that we were told to look up to, where over 100,000 Australians can't get into their own country at the moment. But that's a system that was called for. It was many public health experts in your own show look for it. It's going to work now, I hope, for a short period of time, while it's necessary to protect us from variants of concern. Mm.
And on that point, if we are adding all these countries to the list, is there a possibility there will be a cap on people coming into the country here?
Well, look, I'll have to wait a cabinet decision on that as to what is actually said. But I mean, that is clearly a possibility that someone would have to take into account, because it's already happened in Australia. And because we have a huge amount of Irish people, or people who are entitled to reside here, living abroad. So these do present difficult issues for us. And I have to say, these issues were not reflected in the outrage in the Dáil and the media 3 weeks ago. And quite frankly, on air tonight, and I'll happily predict in about 6 weeks' time, we'll have people wondering why they can't go on holidays. So these things change all the time. What the government is trying to do is protect public health as best we can. We've brought in the toughest system of mandatory hotel quarantine. Right. We've got to keep our eye on the prize, which is keeping the numbers down, protecting ourselves, getting those vaccines rolled out, which they are, and hopefully putting an end to this pandemic and putting an end to all of these restrictions.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. That's Thomas Byrne, Minister of State at the Department of the Taoiseach and the Department of Foreign Affairs. We'll take a break.